Welcome back, everybody. This is Eric and Matt, and this is Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit, your beacon of freedom and the American way of life. Tune in every Friday for a new episode as we dive into the world of liberty and what makes our country great. Today, we are going to dive into the concept of civil disobedience. And unless you guys have been living under a rock, you see all the stuff that's been going on with the protesters, and some of it's turned into looting and rioting. And I suppose the overall question that we could ultimately pose in this podcast today is, there are times for civil disobedience. I mean, our country was really built upon civil disobedience.
Absolutely.
And maybe getting into some of the forms of government overreach, which we've already discussed in the previous podcast, you know, the concept of government overreach and, you know, the government really overstepping their power. It seems to me that with the way things are going right now in our country, there's this huge division. And I'm not going to say that I agree with the division, because I feel like our country should be looking for ways to unite and really have, you know, strong unity and bonds with each other. The reality of the situation is that there's a perception that there's this division, this rift that's been driven. And a lot of it really is the fault of the media and the way that they portray things, the way that they grab onto certain pieces of information, and they really use that as a driving narrative to push a specific narrative. And I would say that that narrative usually is the division that they're even trying to create, that they use these situations as a catalyst to make people angry and to make them do things. And, there's a lot to discuss, and there's a lot of things going on in general, but civil disobedience is a thing, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. A little bit of civil disobedience is a healthy thing if it's done in the correct manner. There certainly are things that can happen that sort of blur and disparage the message that you're trying to get across with what you're trying to do. Overall, I mean, the looting and the rioting, you know, has done a lot of damage. It's hurt and in some cases killed a lot of people, such as Officer Dorn, who's retired. He was shot just trying to stop some people from looting a store. They were stealing some TVs, and he was just probably just trying to have the hard talk with them. Hey, what are y'all doing? You know, this is our neighborhood.
Right.
Got shot over it. You know, scary stuff going on.
Yeah, that was extremely unfortunate. And it was very sad to see that happen. There is a time and a place for civil disobedience, and you nailed it. This country was built around civil disobedience. And a lot of people don't understand that this stems from that ultimate government overreach. When you start looking at why this is taking place, the states have to manage themselves. So when you see all of this civil disobedience popping up, and you see every state handling it differently, that's the way it should be, because every community is different. So you might see, like we heard in Michigan, how, yes, the governor definitely operates in an authoritarian way. The sheriff there handled it completely different, and it went over really well with the whole protest. And there wasn't a lot of the same issues that the rest of the states experienced, versus a lot of other states had mass looting, mass rioting. It extended beyond civil disobedience. It's not civil anymore. It was really just tragic the way that it happened. And there's a lot of small businesses that were affected by that. What I would encourage everybody to look at is, yes, it's okay to protest. However, I don't agree with, you know, destruction of your local communities. What you will see is a lot of times is those are outside agitators that are coming in. And when you look at the pictures and you look at the evidence, that it's been shown that these are people that don't live in the community that are kind of agitating that. And I know we'll touch on that a little bit later in the podcast. But as far as just the act of civil disobedience, it is your responsibility as an American to partake. Don't feel like you have to stand aside and just let the government do whatever they want. You have to let them know that you are an active part of the community, that your voice does matter, and that they do have to fear you as an American citizen. You have the power, whether it's just by a show of force, letting them know that you want change, or whether it's getting out there and marching and protesting in person. And I'll just touch on something real quick. There was a video where the local police were enforcing a curfew, and they were using those pepper ball guns. And there was a young lady and her family on the porch. And part of that curfew stated in writing that you are allowed to be outside on your own property. This is, you know, part of the whole life, liberty, and the pursuit mantra. You own this property. It is yours. And that curfew doesn't extend to your personal property. It's just, you know, you can't be in the streets. They literally went down the street yelling commands. And when they refused, they shot them with pepper balls, which to me is, I mean, that's ludicrous to think that you can be assaulted on your own property by a police officer with a badge. And the terminology that was used when I heard that, it made me really think of a guy that is itching for action. He literally, quote, said, "Light him up." That's like some 80s movie. That's something you would hear in a movie. Like, no one talks like that. We're in the military. We're not going to roll through and be like, "Light them up, boys." It doesn't work that way.
It's not a Vietnamese village in the Vietnam War. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
It really makes me wonder what would have happened if they turned around and defended themselves as Americans. You know, turning the tides on them. They have, you know, technically they have every right to. And they're lucky, the police are lucky that that didn't happen, but what would have been the outcome?
Well, what gets me in that situation is that they're going through these neighborhoods and everything. Well, why can't they go through all the cities where the businesses are being burned and stop those people?
Yeah,
they're going to go through and make a big deal about people filming the police from their porch and then publicize that and make a big deal about that. Well, I think that video was shared by the person that actually got shot at by the rubber bullets. I mean, there's a lot of paradigms that are being made in this current struggle, and we're going to get into some of those. I feel like, you know, I want to quote Thomas Jefferson. All right, so this comes from the Declaration of Independence. So this is pretty important, and you guys know these words, you've heard it, but I want to mention it again because it's very pertinent here in this discussion. Whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government. Now, what's meant by that? Now, he's obviously referring to the legislative process. I mean, if you get people in that, you know, vote in crappy laws, or they suggest crappy laws, or they have bad policies, they do crappy things, and they piss you off, well, then guess what? You need to vote them out and put somebody in there that will do the right thing. That's primarily what he's referring to. Now, this particular quote here, I believe, comes from Thomas Jefferson's retirement papers, some of his later papers in life. If a law is unjust, a man is not only right to disobey it, he is obligated to do so. And later on, none other than Martin Luther King himself quoted in his famous letter from the Birmingham jail when he was arrested, one has not only a legal but a moral responsibility to obey just laws. Conversely, one has a moral responsibility to disobey unjust laws.
That's right.
Which is essentially kind of paraphrasing Thomas Jefferson in a way, kind of in his own way, that he felt was pertinent to that particular situation that he was in at the time. And yeah, so it is a very American trait for people to want to stand up against authority and to voice their concerns and protest. I mean, it's enshrined in our Bill of Rights and our Constitution and the very founding documents of our country that we have the right to assembly, the right to protest, the freedom of speech. We have property rights. We have due process. We have the Second Amendment, right? All of these rights that we are, you know, that are affirmed to us, okay? Those rights are so that an authoritative government cannot trample all over us and can't, you know, tell us how to run our lives and to tell us what time it is. So it's normal for people to want to, you know, they see an injustice occur and they want to get out there and, you know, do something about it. I can completely understand that. There is a very big difference between people that are holding up signs and trying to show solidarity with their communities, and they're going out and having a peaceful protest. There's a difference between those people and the people that are out there, you know, using it as a easy opportunity to go and rob and loot and steal and in some cases murder people. And you really have to ask yourself, like Matt said, you know, that there has to be some actors, some agitators within those groups that are doing this to try to start some crazy race war or to further drive a rift between groups of people that obviously, whether it's because the media has sort of pushed that narrative in the way that they have as swiftly as they have, or it's because their own perception of the situation, right? One could easily perceive, oh, well, this is what I saw in the media, so the mainstream media reported it like this, so this is the way I'm going to think about it. And it's okay to have that thought because someone told you that. The issue is we as a country have really allowed ourselves to be manipulated by the media, the mainstream media, way too readily, right? And we always, growing up, a lot of us, as young people especially, it's like you always thought, oh, well, when you see something on the news, it's got to be legit. It's got to, you know, it's being reported because these people that are reporting the news are good people and they care about the facts and they care about being objective. And we've all sort of grown up to look at it from that perspective. You know, like I remember as a young man growing up and listening to like Monica Kaufman and Amanda Davis. And, you know, when Amanda Davis spoke about something, and we're here in Atlanta, Georgia, just so you guys know. If some of you local Atlantans that have been here a long time probably remember Amanda Davis, who she's passed away now, but what a wonderful woman. And she was always so fair and concise, and you could tell that she really cared about just getting down to, like, the bottom of the facts, like actually caring about being objective and reporting the facts and then just letting people decide the truth for themselves. Now the media, they want to assign the truth to you. They want to tell you, oh, well, this is the reality. This is the truth. This is, they're indoctrinating you by forcing a narrative down your throat instead of giving you all the facts and then letting you be your own person and decide, oh, well, this is what, this is, you know, plan A or plan B, you know, and I arrived at that situation because these people fairly and concisely reported all the facts and information I needed to know to come to a informed opinion. The media no longer gives a crap about informing people about the facts and letting them draw their own conclusions. They've turned into a giant indoctrination machine that allows them to essentially push a narrative. And the problem is because people have relied on the media for information for so long, the mainstream media, of course they're going to go, oh my God, this cop put his knee on this guy's neck and killed him, and he did it maliciously, and you know what? We've got to do something about it. That's half the truth, right? I mean, you're not going to find anybody on this podcast that is more critical of the police and police brutality and police overstepping their authorities than us here. Okay?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely. But the thing is if you're going to be a truthful person, and you're going to be true with yourself and true with the society around you, and if you're going to be a just person that cares about the facts, then you've got to look at the facts, okay? No one in a million years would ever think that any crime, short of murdering someone or raping some little girl or doing some heinous, horrible stuff like that, would ever in a million years merit having a knee put on your neck for 9 minutes until you died.
Right.
Okay. Nobody thinks that that is a justifiable means of handling that situation. Now, some later reports came out, and this is even after Chad and I filmed our Gun Gripe. If you guys don't follow us on Gun Gripes, I post videos over on IraqVeteran8888 on YouTube. Chad and I, he's the co-host for Gun Gripes. We did a video about Mr. Floyd and the whole situation with the riots. And I actually didn't know at the time that the toxicology reports came back from Mr. Floyd. And he had fentanyl in his system. And he had, you know, drugs in his system. So you have to look at the facts. I mean, now, just because someone has drugs in their system, does that mean that they deserve to die? Of course not. Nobody is saying, oh, well, because he tried to pass a $20 counterfeit bill, because he had fentanyl in his system, because, okay, he tested positive for coronavirus antibodies. All of that's irrelevant. It doesn't matter what, you know, the situation was. Simply having a drug in your system doesn't mean that your life is forfeit, okay? It doesn't mean that that situation was the correct situation, right, for them to put Mr. Floyd in, and then he wind up dying. Now, is that to say that the guy, you know, the officer who's now in custody, and everybody's, you know, calling for justice, right? They want justice for Mr. Floyd, all right? Well, justice will be what justice is if this guy's convicted of second or third degree manslaughter or whatever the case may be. You know, whether his actions were negligent, whether his actions were, oh, well, you know what, I hate this guy, therefore I'm going to do something to try to hurt this guy on purpose. I don't think that he had some malicious intent from the get-go. I think that what happened to Mr. Floyd was a result of probably less than ideal training. I think that, you know, he probably just did not have very good training, which it seems like a lot of these things are training dispositions where, you know, police lack the training and the expertise to deal with certain situations. And the problem is they have to think on their feet and come up with a rapid way to solve a situation. And that answer is not always the right thing. I think he probably got caught up in the moment, panicked, didn't know what to do, and that muscle memory just sort of kicked in. I'm not making excuses, because there was certainly some negligence that played into why Mr. Floyd passed away. Okay, so the other cops that were standing there, if the guy's saying, I can't breathe, right? Well, then why didn't they go, hey, you know, they should have went over to the arresting officer and say, hey, man, like, this guy's saying he can't breathe. Like, give him a minute. Like, let him sit up. Or put him in the car. Like, you've got him handcuffed. Take him in the custody. Put him in the car. Roll down the windows. Let him breathe. And if he wants to thrash around and kick around, no matter what he was doing, to be angry, then let him be angry in the back of the car and let him get his breath. But they were complicit in the action.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So that's one of those weird situations that you get put in terms of law enforcement where, you know, what are you supposed to do? So, you know, this guy's obviously saying, hey, I can't breathe. And then all the people that saw it happen were saying, hey, the guy's saying he can't breathe. Well, then why not just say, hey, you know, let this guy sit up and breathe a second. You know, it wouldn't have taken – you could have done it professionally, but one of those guys could have walked up and just said, hey, man, like, you got him. He's down, okay? Like, he's cuffed. Like, let him sit up and breathe. Like, he's saying he can't breathe. Let him sit up. So the problem is a lot of law enforcement, it seems to me, and there are a lot of good ones out there. There are some great cops out there that are good people, but there's also some crappy ones. And it seems like some of them really have lost their humanity. You know, they have separated themselves from the struggle of average people. They're now on a higher level. They feel that they're on a higher level. And their actions and the way that they handle themselves within the society that they're in, they view themselves as an overseer, and they view themselves as a, you know, judge, jury, and, you know, they view themselves as a higher authority over you. So you're no longer on their level anymore. When they're at that level, there's this thing that occurs when people put on uniforms, right?
Right.
And if you guys haven't read the book, I'm sorry I'm talking a lot, but if you guys haven't read the book, you need to read it. It's called Ordinary Men. It's about the Nazi police battalions in World War II. They got pushed into guard camp, being guards at the concentration camps. And the things that people will do in the name of duty, in the name and the guise of duty, and the guise of being told, oh, I'm just following orders, people will do extreme things when they have that immunity of, oh, I was just following orders. So that's the issue. People, these police need to think as people. They need to think as fellow citizens. They need to think as human beings. They need to think of, hey, what would I want someone to do to me if I was in this situation? They have lost all empathy for the people around them, because they feel that they've been placed on this higher platform that the rest of us aren't worthy to obtain. And I think that a lot of it is class struggle. They view themselves as a higher class than we are, and anyone who's not them is below them, therefore not open to the same privileges and treatment that one of their own would get. And you can see this too by, like, when these guys get in trouble or something goes wrong, they always cover up for each other, they back each other. And I get that. Like, you're going to back the people that are your people. Yeah, I mean, that's just the bottom line. It's what we do as a culture. You know, we're very tribal, right? You know, one of our own does something, you know, we have a tendency to want to try to, you know, make it go away. That's just natural, right? So, yeah, if a cop does some heinous bullcrap, one of your other fellow cop buddies, trust me, if they were in that situation, they'd want to be treated in the similar way that, oh, well, we protect our own, we do this, we sweep it under the rug. So to say that that doesn't happen is a slap in the face to all the people that are victims of this stuff, right? So, yeah, I mean, I didn't mean to go too far down that rabbit hole, but I feel like it's an important paradigm to consider that civil disobedience is merited and is necessary in a lot of situations, and our country was built on civil disobedience. But there's a fine line between doing heinous things like hurting businesses and killing people and committing millions of dollars in damage. And that point, that's not going to drive your point home, right? More deadly damage and more, you know, mistreatment of the society around you is not going to make what happened to Mr. Floyd go away. And it's not going to get to the root of the problem as to why those things happen. That's the important thing, is to try to get to the root of the issue and figure out a way to make these things not occur in the future.
I think that you did a really good job of drilling down into why what your opinion was, because it's very easy to say your opinion and then not provide the context of it. What I will say is two things. One, it was a huge training failure on the department side. If you watch the video, when he's on his neck, he's, and this is something that police officers and even all law enforcement have this naturally ingrained into them, is their job is to impose their will on you. So the fact that he had his knee there and everybody's telling him to stop, that gave him the reason to not stop, is because in his brain that switch went on and said, well, if I do what you tell me to do, I've lost control of the situation. So at that point he has to stay where he's at because he doesn't want to lose control of the situation. He has an angry mob around him and he's going to impose his will. Unfortunately, the consequences of that showed itself. The other officers that were there, the other three officers were there, were complicit in that. And that was, it came out, they all have a rap sheet internally. They've all had multiple complaints through their entire career. And that's exactly what you said. They cover up for each other. And it just so happens that those are the guys that cover for each other in the department. The other three officers have been brought up on charges as well, as they should. Now, whether they're criminal or negligent, the court system will decide that.
And I also read that those guys had not only complaints from prior complaints, but that department in general has had a lot of complaints against them for that type of stuff.
Well,
it's not an unknown thing.
Yeah, the Asian dude had a lawsuit brought up on him, the Asian police officer.
Oh, man.
And they settled. I think it was like $25,000 or something with something. But yeah, they all have internal affairs rap sheet because it's the department in general. So one, it's a training failure because there's a lot of different ways you could handle that. And I mean, we talk with a lot of veterans. If we did that stuff overseas, we'd be brought up on charges. Like that's like we would be indicted for that. And to not have your American police force held to the same standards as your military, and people can't say, oh well, you know, it's a high stress environment. That was probably one of the lowest stress environments I've ever seen to put yourself in that situation. Very low stress. So no, I think it was a huge training failure, and it was a complicit act between all four. As far as the consequences of that, they'll get what they get, whether it's criminal or civil. Either way, there something's going to happen, because just because you're not brought up on criminal charges doesn't mean that they're not going to come after you in civil court as well for any of those issues. Now, as far as that police department, they're saying like they're looking to completely disband. That's an interesting concept I'm hearing. They're looking to disband that entire police department and start fresh. If they do that, One way I could see that happening is that the sheriff's department would step in, because that's actually happened in a few other jurisdictions. Not that the police department was disbanded, but they actually ran out of money for the police department, because the sheriff's department and the police department are separate. They do have separate funding. So they would, the police department went to the sheriff's department and said, hey, we can't afford to continue operations. So now the sheriff's department has to take over all of that. So that is one option until they get back.
I do like that the sheriff is an elected official as well.
That's what really keeps them honest. They have a reason to stay honest. They want to make sure they have a job. They have an agenda. They do have to get out there and they have to put their message out. This is what I'm running for. This is what, you know, these are what my goals are. I do wish we had more of a presence with the sheriff's department. I understand that they're there to handle the more rural areas and the jail system and bail and all that stuff. But honestly, in my personal experience, I've had much better interactions with sheriff's deputies than I had with police officers, like your local police officers.
They're usually pretty cool people.
They are, and I think that they're more used to being in that high stress environment, because they're in a rural area. They're out there. They're patrolling areas where it's just them. So they're almost used to having a little bit more situational awareness. They have to understand, like, hey, I'm out here by myself in the middle of nowhere, and it's just me.
And they also understand that, you know, hey, I've got to use my verbal judo.
Yep.
Right? And if there's a situation I find myself within, I need to use my verbal judo to get out of this, because I may not be going home if somebody decides that, you know, that they want to make a big deal about this situation.
Right. Like, in my mind, it's those are the guys, the sheriff's deputies will come knock on your door and they know your name, just because it is more of a, it's more of a local presence there. They know who you are. They're used to this area. That's their community. They live there. You don't get that with a lot of the police. A lot of them don't live in that community. They don't live in that jurisdiction. And you can tell, even with what's going on in LA and New York, none of those police officers actually live there. It's impossible for them to live there. It's too expensive. They're living way outside in different jurisdictions, and they come in and work. And what does that cause? That causes them to not care about the local communities, because it's not their community. Why would they care?
Yeah. You know, there's also another important paradigm that I want to bring up in this particular podcast in relation to civil disobedience. So I'm going to refer back to the Virginia rally. All right, we had the 2A rally in Virginia, and I was there. I helped cover it, and we have a full YouTube video on it where we interviewed a ton of great people. And at that Virginia rally, we saw so much awesome diversity. I mean, I'm talking black, white, female, male, LGBT community. There were these people holding up flags, right, these huge banners that they had made, and it said, you know, Vietnamese citizens for Trump. And there's one that said Asians for Trump. And it was like so many people were just showing support for, you know, for gun ownership. And, you know, it was great.
For freedom.
There was not a single issue. And I know some of you probably saw, you know, all of the reports of people cleaning up trash. And, like, we left the place spotless. We came. We protested. We did what we needed to do. And we were professional. Okay. All right. Now let's fast forward to now and look at the looting and the rioting and everything that's going on. Okay. You mentioned earlier that those officers were implicit in the actions that happened to Mr. Floyd, because they were complicit in it because they didn't do anything to stop him.
Right.
Okay. They could have easily said, hey, man, like, you need to, why don't you go step over there for a minute? You know,
yeah, take
you
a
know
breather.
That military speak, like, well, someone's going through a stressful moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can go, hey, man, like, why don't you? Here, come here. Go over there for a minute. Let me handle this. You know, someone could have stepped in and took over and handled it, right? But they didn't.
Right.
Okay, so that means that they either agree with those actions or they were complicit in it and knew what was going to happen and didn't care. Okay, so when we look at that complicit, you know, actions that go on. All right, now, had somebody at the Virginia rally started smashing business windows or looting or doing some stupid crap, or God forbid, open fire or something like that, you know dang well as I do that there wouldn't have been the slightest bit that the people there would not have stood for that bullcrap. They would have immediately gotten that bad actor and dealt with him and turned him over and did what they needed to do. And there was a situation. Now, I don't know. There was one arrest in relation to the Virginia rally. And I think this lady, and I don't know if it ever came out that she was Antifa or anything like that. But this one lady tried to cause a ruckus and was, I don't know, throwing paint at people or some stupid bullcrap like that. They immediately dealt with her, like rounded her up. That was it. They put a stop to that. Okay, and then there was the issue with this one person that was a reporter for some liberal, you know, mainstream media outlet that was taking brass cases and throwing them out on the ground, like empty, you know, empty cartridges, right, and throwing them out on the ground and trying to take pictures like there was shooting, had people had opened fire.
Wow.
And was going to write a hit piece about the Virginia rally saying that, oh, there was shooting here and that the media just didn't report it. So they were trying to, like, literally write hit pieces about the situation. They were looking for all of these reasons to turn that thing out to be this, oh, white supremacy and the Boogaloo movement, and trying to paint all of those people with the broadest, evilest brush that they possibly could, right? To the degree of lying, we're talking about the mainstream media absolutely lying about several of the things that happened at that rally. The mainstream media most certainly didn't bother showing photos of black and white patriots together, armed, there in unity, to show solidarity with gun owners. And with the one unifying factor being that gun owners stick together and they look out for the communities and each other. They don't want that narrative to get out there because that crushes their narrative of the white extremists and racists and all that. So fast forward to now. All right, and this is where I'm going to ruffle some feathers, but it needs to be said, okay? What is happening now, okay? All right, let's say that Black Lives Matter or whoever these protesters might be, even if it's just a small group of protesters that are loosely organized within their own little community and they want to make signs and go out there and walk and protest these things that are going on, okay? That's cool. You know, do what you need to do. But the issue is that when those protests, when some aspect of that protest becomes violent, whether it's looting of a store, whether it's burning down a store, or whether it is murdering somebody, excuse me, or robbing somebody, no matter what the case may be, no matter what the violence may be, okay, if you stand there and let it happen, you are complicit in the carrying out of that violence.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I agree.
So it's like, you know, look, protest, do your thing, right? But if you are an organized movement and you've got, you know, organized players within the particular community that are going to, you know, send out messages to people, hey, this is where we meet, here's what time to be there. I mean, like the Virginia rally, there was bulletins put out about where to be, what to do, what not to do. Hey, pick up your trash. Hey, don't be a dick. You know, all these things were clearly measured. There it was, right? So if it was some organized thing, like everyone says it is, then when someone within that group starts going, you know, picking up bricks and throwing through windows, bam, they should have immediately went, you're not going to ruin the sanctity of this situation and deal with them and either self-police or whatever they're going to do. But that didn't occur. So with this mob mentality, you know, you get these people together, all this violence starts to occur. If you do nothing about the violence, it's the same as saying you're okay with the violence occurring.
I would even dare and say I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to mention that in that case of what happened to Mr. Floyd, those that were around him, I don't want to say were complicit in his murder, but it's our duty as Americans to say something. And I understand recording it is a crucial part of what happened, because that's pretty much the only reason that anything happened. But go an extra step. I mean, it's crazy and it's scary to think that if anybody would have stepped in that wasn't wearing a badge could have been killed for helping a fellow American not be killed is mind-boggling. To think that if three or four people approached that police officer and said, hey, sir, you're killing him and we're gonna stop you from killing him. Think about the actions that would have happened. Think about the chain of events that would have taken place for anybody that felt that they wanted to step in to keep this guy from getting murdered. I mean, let that sink in. As fellow Americans, if you said, you know what, I'm not going to stand by and let this happen. I'm not going to watch this man die. But to think that the three other officers there would shoot you dead.
And we have to look at both contexts of that particular situation, okay? So another way that we could view that situation is the underlying causes for this civil disobedience, the underlying, you know, sort of ramifications for these things, right? Mm-hmm. So we as a society, you know, are not encouraged to police the police. We can't police the police. The minute that you said, hey, dirtbags, quit that, you're killing that guy, and you do something about it, okay, as right as you may be, and as right as 10 of you may be, what's to stop them from going, oh, you're trying to attack us, and then opening fire, and then you get shot up over it, over just trying to do the right thing. And then, of course, the way that the media is going to spin it, the way that the police department's going to spin it, is that, oh, an angry mob attacked the police, and they had to defend themselves. They're not going to tell the truth about the reason that that happened, okay? Now, I understand that there is certainly, you know, freedom does come some responsibility, right? But I will say that I prefer dangerous freedom to peaceful slavery. And from my perspective, it's like my freedom does not end where your fear begins, right? Like Benjamin Franklin said, it's our republic if we can keep it, okay? So life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the very concept that this podcast is even named after, okay, that means nothing if you don't pursue that happiness, right? You've got to live, you have to live the freedom that you want, right? And I'm not saying like utter anarchy or anything, but you've got to try to be a pillar within your community, be a good person, do what you can. If you don't like the laws, change the dang laws by voting in people that are going to, you know, vote the way you want them to vote and that are going to, you know, get bills and laws passed that you want.
Or okay? Run yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Or run yourself. Okay. Another aspect of that is, you know, yeah, be a responsible person, be a good person, but live the life you want to live and be an example of what life, liberty, and the pursuit is for you by being a good person and living that life. If you don't pursue said happiness, then what life are you living? So it's really tough. It's a tough situation, what's going on right now in our country. I mean, is there a place for civil disobedience? Absolutely. We all engage in forms of civil disobedience every single day.
Right.
Whether we realize it or not, we engage in those things.
Yeah, and I would say that I don't condone the looting and the rioting. However, I will go out on a limb and say that they got the desired effect, and I'll use the AG's initial press release to prove that. That same morning that before all the looting and rioting kicked off, the Minnesota AG actually went out and released a press release that said, we do not see any actions here that would cause us to bring charges among the police officers. That happened in the morning, in the AM. And by the evening, everything had popped off. So basically all the rioting and the protests and all that stuff had started to formulate that day. The track record for indicting police officers isn't the best. And I think that the people that were organizing these protests and marches understood that. Now, the rioting and the looting that took place is extremely unfortunate. However, I can almost guarantee you that the desired result would not have happened if the rioting and looting had not taken place. But, and I say that because it took 3 days, almost 4 days of extreme civil disobedience for them to indict the police officer. So it's almost like they tried to wait it out and see if the federal government would step in to quell it so they wouldn't have to bring up charges. But then they realized
it wasn't going away.
No one's going to help you. It's not going away. So they had to bring charges on them. And again, my personal opinion, I speak for me, rightfully so. What he did was very heinous, and he deserves every bit of what he gets. But it took that much to get some type of legal action out of it. And it's unfortunate to the umpteenth percentile. But that's the extreme side of civil disobedience, I would say.
It is. I mean, you know, oftentimes, you know, we citizens are held under an extremely discerning microscope. There are thousands upon thousands of laws. Okay, there are a million, seemingly a million and one ways for you to lose your freedom. Okay,
right.
And they love to point that at you. They love to throw that book at you any opportunity they can. I mean, there's multiple codes and all kind of things written within these laws that give them so much immunity. In a lot of ways, they can find some reason to throw you in jail.
Absolutely.
So they want to have all these reasons to deprive you of your freedom. And then they want more reasons to deprive you of your freedom on the books. They always want to pass more laws. The answer is, oh, more laws, more laws, more gun laws, more red flag laws, all this stuff. And that's the, you know, issue is that, you know, they want to have the ability to have so many different ways to deprive you of your freedom. But then when you look at them under even the tiniest microscope, all of a sudden, oh, well, you're just being a rabble-rouser, you're being a baiter, you're being this, you're being that. You know, they don't want the same applied to them. See, again, it's the do as I say, not as I do mentality.
Right.
It's the good for me is good for thee or whatever. You know what? Yeah. What's good for thee is not good for me or whatever. Right. They don't want to have the same laws and rules applied to them. You always notice that when they're trying to get all this gun control passed and everything, oh, it always exempts law enforcement and military conveniently.
Oh, yeah.
Because they got to have somebody to carry out their wishes against the populace.
Right.
So, yeah, of course, you know, a gun ban is not going to affect the police because the police would get upset. Well, wait a minute. We're on this pedestal. So, wait a minute. No. We can't be under the same scrutiny that the public are. Those
right.
those peons. We're
going to
be down
we're
there with those
them.
Peons.
Yeah.
So, the point is, though, is that, you know, the enforcement of unconstitutional laws must be carried out by somebody, okay? And without law enforcement to enforce an unconstitutional law, then an unconstitutional law is just a bad idea that some politician had. It's nothing more than a terrible idea at that point. But the minute that terrible idea manifests into Duncan Limp having his door kicked in and shot, okay, you know, red flag situations like that first initial red flag shooting that occurred in Maryland with the elderly gentleman.
Right.
They went to take his guns, and of course, some fire was exchanged, and he was killed, right? All these no-knock warrants, red flag laws. These are all really scary situations. They're really scary things that when I grew up as a young man in this country and what I thought freedom was and what I thought living in a free country was, that's not it, right? You know, you shouldn't have to live in fear in the United States of America in any situation at all, whether you're black, white, no matter what religion you are. That's not how it works. Like, this is the, you know, land of the free, home of the brave. Like, we live our lives vicariously through our actions, by what we do. We live as free men, and we extend that freedom to other people. So, you should not have to live in fear in the United States of America. I should not have to wonder if my door is going to get kicked in because some jealous ex-girlfriend submitted a red flag confiscation order against me, or because some person tried to swat me because they hate me and they want the police to come shoot me up. You know, I shouldn't have to be worried about a system being weaponized. Okay.
Well, that's exactly what it is.
Right, a system being weaponized against me and me getting in trouble over something. I didn't even break a law, right? I didn't do something wrong, right? So, I mean, we have due process in this country. You know, you're innocent until proven guilty.
You're supposed to.
Yeah, if you do something wrong, you're brought up on charges, and then they have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you've broken a law, and then you get to be judged by a jury of your peers. I mean, that's how it's supposed to work. It's not supposed to be pre-crime. Oh, you may commit a crime. Well, therefore, we're going to kick in your door, shoot your dog, take your guns away, and then, you know what? You'll just sort it out in court. And that's only if you heard us yell, Sheriff's Department.
Right.
You know, you're asleep in the middle of the night. You're not going to hear them yell, Sheriff's Department. You're asleep. You may not even hear the door get broke in.
Right.
I mean, I sleep like a freaking rock. I'm not going to hear that. I'm going to hear the door get crashed in, mm-hmm. and I'm going to get up and go investigate. But how dangerous of a situation can that be for a person who, you know, lives in a crowded city and they just got the wrong flat? You know, right. They were supposed to go up this staircase, but they went up the wrong staircase, kicked in the wrong door. Or they transposed a number on a form. How many times has the government screwed up VA paperwork, promotion packets, right? I love me packets.
Boy.
I mean,
yeah.
When you start getting into government documents, government forms, you know, all of these things, court orders, they're all government forms, right? All these things have to be carried out in a concise and strictly controlled manner, right? All it takes is for one person to transpose a number. Oops, got the number in the wrong spot. Made a clerical error. And then now you're kicking in the wrong door. And now you're in the shootout at 3 o'clock in the morning with somebody you don't even need to be getting in a shootout with. And you know 9 times out of 10, it ends with that person dying.
Yep. I mean, they're coming in hot. That is a dynamic entry. They're not sneaking in. They're not opening the door and creeping through your house. They are doors getting hammered. They're coming in hot. So yes, if I'm asleep at 2 a.m. and I hear a big crash and a bunch of footsteps coming through my house, you better believe they're getting the gas. All right. That's just the way it is. Personal experience, you get tunnel vision. You're not hearing anything that's going on. Your brain goes into survival mode and they're getting the gas right through the walls, man.
Yeah, I mean, and what happens when, you know, a situation where you've got some elderly person
mm-hmm.
that, you know, they don't know. I mean, there was a situation where this lady, and I think it was actually, might have even been here in Atlanta, where this elderly lady, you know, got her door kicked in. And, of course, she fired a shot because she thought she was being broke in on,
Good for her.
Ended up being the police, and they killed her.
That's unfortunate.
And she didn't even shoot at them. I think she fired like a shot through the
warning shot
through the roof or something. Yeah. You know, well, I think that she just wasn't really in her right mind. I mean, because you got to think, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. You're elderly.
Mm-hmm.
You think someone's trying to hurt you. Her reaction was probably just to shoot a shot, no matter where it went. And I guess it went through but there was a shot through the roof, and of course they killed her.
That's unfortunate.
And it was the wrong house.
Yeah.
So beyond all of these things, I mean, it's a scary situation where, like you said, the training disposition is simply not there. You know, these guys are expected to get paid $42,000 a year, and they want them to have the courage of a Marine, and they want them to have the brain of a lawyer, and they want you to have the personality of a bartender and do it for $39,000 a year. It's not an equation that's going to work.
Right. No, I agree 100%, and something has to change regardless if that is, you know, SLPs changing. And you know what? I do think moving forward, there is going to be so much more scrutiny put on whether you're a police officer or a sheriff's department. I do have to make that differentiation because we know both, and they make it very clear that there is a distinction between the two. But there's going to be a lot of SLPs that are updated. There's going to be a lot of training that takes place, regardless if it's, you know, hands-on, like you're just learning to get some better open hand skills. So this doesn't happen. A lot of this happens because that's the easy way. It's easier and it requires less stamina to sit on top of somebody with a knee than it does to actually control the body. And a lot of that just comes out of, you know, it sheer ease of use. It frees up both hands. They're able to do what they need to do. But I do think there's going to be a large amount of jiu-jitsu training going on.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there certainly needs to be a change in tactics and a change in training dispositions, and making sure that these guys understand that, you know, people can get hurt with these, you know, tactics and everything like that. And I think there needs to be a big overhaul. There needs to be a big overhaul in the training requirements for police. There needs to be definitely an overhaul in giving them military equipment. I don't agree with the militarization of the police.
I don't. You know? I know that's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I see that, and lots of times people go, well, they don't need to. They're a very small department. They don't need that. You have to understand, they're not buying that. A lot of that stuff is grants. They're gifted. So yeah, it is under normal circumstances, there's no way that police department will be able to afford that MRAP. It's just not feasible. But because the government, the federal government, is making it available to them, of course they're going to take it. Who wouldn't want an MRAP? You know, it's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I agree with you. You know, let's not just give that stuff away for free. It makes you want to use it. I know that's a very bad thing to say, but you have it. There makes them want to use it. Oh, what can we use this MRAP for? Let's stand up the SWAT unit because now you have an MRAP. We didn't have a SWAT team before, but now we have an MRAP or we have some other tactical vehicle. We need a SWAT team. So now we have a SWAT team. What do we need? Now we need just, you know, what else can we get for free from them? And they start just loading them up.
And if they don't use those budgets, they don't get them exactly. The next year. So when they're extended the budgets, of course they're going to use it. And we need to get rid of qualified immunity. Another really scary aspect of this whole thing is I think that a lot of them feel like, you know, that if they are involved in a situation, oh, well, they'll just claim, you know, qualified immunity and they'll get out of it and it won't be a big deal and their buddies will cover for them. So I do want to say this, though, just to sort of – I don't want it to sound like I'm anti-police or that I hate the police. And I also don't want it to sound like I'm some statist or whatever, and I feel like the government should come in and strong-arm everybody over this whole thing. I'll quickly mention, you know, Trump and his statements from the Rose Garden where he mentioned, hey, you know, if the governors are not going to deal with this situation, we will bring in the federal government. We will deal with it. You know, our government has a very astute way of when they want something, they get it, okay? And I get that, and it's one of the things that make our country very powerful and great in terms of our military and in terms of our abilities to do what we need to do to secure places and things. It's just what we do, right? Now, I'm not going to deny that that's not an important thing to be able to pull out when you need to. I agree with you. I think that the governors should handle this all in their own way. And I think when you look at the states that are being the most heavily affected by these looting and rioting and everything, it's mostly blue cities.
Right.
Okay. And it's mostly blue areas. You notice that these looters and rioters aren't going to rural Georgia and trying to mess with some small town because they know they'll get their asses blown away.
Right.
Okay. And the same thing is in other states. You know, they're not going to go to the rural areas where all the gun owners are because they're going to get shot. Okay, they're going to go where they know people are weak and that policy is weak, all right? Like, you know, in Atlanta right now, okay? Those cops are being very, like, hands off, right? They're being told to kind of stand down and not – I mean, yeah, they're arresting people. I think in one night alone, they arrested, like, 90 people, okay? And I'm sure those people were throwing bricks, vandalizing property. You know, they had stolen property. I mean, and those are all valid reasons for someone to be arrested because they have created a victim. They have victimized those businesses.
Correct.
They have caused damage, right? They have committed a crime, okay? You know, crime is committed. Someone's a victim of a crime. All right, you arrest somebody. All right, that makes sense. I'm not a statist, right? I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, well, the federal government should crush any and all people. You know, even Trump acknowledged, okay, in his address that – you know, there was a very, very big difference between the people that are peacefully protesting and showing solidarity against the situation. And there's a stark difference between that and the people that are causing all of the violence and everything. So he did make a distinct reference between those two groups of people. I think that there are some blurred lines somewhere in there where, like, yeah, some of the protesters might have turned violent and then went to, you know, maybe kick it up a notch. I still feel that it's on those groups of protesters to police their people. And when they become bad outliers and muddy the message that they're trying to promote, they need to deal with those people and make sure that they can't do it.
Which took place in one of the cities. You saw that video,
yes.
How it showed the Antifa guy breaking up the sidewalk with a hammer and the actual peaceful protesters didn't want anything of it. They
Heck
said,
yeah.
No, they were like, let's.
That's the kind of stuff that's got to happen. And you noticed it was an old white guy with like
was,
gray hair.
Yeah.
And they pulled his cap off and it's like, who is this freaking professor hippie?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He's just breaking up concrete. And I'm so happy they did that because.
And I'm happy it was filmed.
Yes, because those are the types of things you don't see on a lot of the media coverage. Matter of fact, we only saw it because of social media, not on the news. You didn't see that.
Oh, no.
So I think in a way, social media has really changed the game as far as the information that's being put out there to the masses. because like you said earlier in the podcast, depending on how your parents align when you're a child depends on what you're going to, which way you're going to lean. That's because that's the news. That's the agenda, whether you're Fox or CNN. Both they're two separate sides of the story, and that's what you see growing up. And I think that the only reason that happened was because of social media. When you mentioned that, you know, back in the early days of the news, it was unbiased, is because there was no competition. There was no reason that the media had to introduce any type of clickbait or have a biased opinion, because they received all of that ad revenue from the advertisers. That's where you went to get your information. With the introduction of the internet, with the introduction of social media, those ad dollars dried up. So now that forces the media to lean to certain sides to get that ad revenue. They said, hey, we can't be unbiased because this is the amount of money we're receiving. But if we lean a certain way, we're going to get more of their money.
And you got to follow the dollar. I mean, ultimately, all of this situation, I mean, I don't want to get on the tinfoil bandwagon, but George Soros, and you look at the Clinton Foundation, and you look at where all this money mm-hmm. comes from, the big bankers, big business, big government, big pharma, all these people have a vested interest in keeping control of the simple-minded people. And I hate to say that, but you're being used as a pawn in a giant game where the war is for your mind, right? It literally is a war of your mind.
You are the market share.
You are the market share, yeah. Right? The control of you and keeping you in the place where you are is exactly their desired result. And if they need to fuel that through division, if they need to fuel that through race riots, if they need to fuel that through trying to make everyone think that people of the opposite race hate you and they're racist against you, then they're going to take whatever low moral ground they can possibly, the lowest hanging fruit they can get to make you think that the world is out to get you. And while you're distracted, that's when they use those opportunities to pass crappy gun laws. It's when they use opportunities to get more red flag laws. It's where they pass all of these restrictions on our freedoms. And it's a giant chipping away of a free society. We have to be smarter than that, guys. We've got to be free thinkers in this world. We've got to, you know, get into a situation here where we can call these bad actors out for who they are. Call out the bad politicians. Call out the bad police that are doing bad things. Call out the bad people within our own organizations that are doing crappy things that we're like, hey, we don't approve of that, right? You know, how hard would it be for Black Lives Matter or some group or whoever it would be? You know, I don't want to be accused of being a racist by saying this, but how hard would it be for them to just say, hey, we're releasing this statement and we're saying, all you looters and you rioters, you don't represent who we are and what our movement is about and what we are about, and we are ashamed of you and we do not condone your actions. All right, you do not represent us. You are not us. Okay. How hard would that be?
It's interesting. I would assume that they would do that as an organization.
And I'm not going to sit here and say that I know whether they have or haven't. I'm just saying that would be an easy solution to just put out a statement.
Right.
I mean, they're a group. They're an organized group, right? It would be like someone accusing the NRA of starting a riot, as much as I'm not a fan of the NRA. But the thing is, it would be like someone accusing GOA or FPC or the NRA for starting a riot. And then them releasing a statement going, yeah, by the way, guys, we didn't start that riot and we don't approve or condone of those actions. So again, being complicit in actions is ignoring the actions, and not making a statement about it says that you agree with those actions.
And the NRA actually does the opposite. They try to take credit for other people's actions. I think there was like one law that got passed, I believe it was in Tennessee, and they tried to step in. They were like, hey, yeah, because of us, we got that pushed through. And then the actual community polices itself in this manner, and they step up and say, no, you guys didn't have anything to do with this. We understand that your donations are down, which is why you're doing this, but you didn't have anything to do with it. So don't try to take credit for it.
Yep. So look, guys, no matter where on this situation you stand, it is completely normal for us to enact some form of civil disobedience when it's needed, right? It's okay to get upset. It's okay to have an emotionally driven response to something. But let that little voice of logic exist in your hearts and your minds. Always, always, always question, am I doing the right thing? Am I making the right decision? Is this action really going to get me the result that I need, right? Am I going to get a positive result from this conversation? Am I going to get a positive result from throwing this brick through this window? Before you throw that brick, really think, like, what am I really accomplishing? You know, that's the thing. We've got to be better people. You can't just allow the media to spoon feed all this information to you. You've got to be critical thinkers. That's what we owe each other, and that's what we owe society, is to think critically and to come up with decisions based on logic, based on facts, and then use those facts to draw a conclusion and make the right decision. And be vocal about that decision and stand by that decision. Okay? If you make a bad decision, acknowledge it and move on with life. Hey, I messed up. And then we move on with life.
Well said.
Well, guys, thank you for tuning in. Remember, we post here on Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit every Friday. Make sure you tune in. You can follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. We're on Stitcher. We're all over the place where fine podcasts are sent out on the airwaves. We do post some of these on the YouTube channel. If you go to IraqVeteran8888, you'll probably see a few of them popping up on there. Not every episode, but some of them. Thank you guys so much. And if you'd like to support Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit, go over to ballisticinc.com, pick yourself up a snazzy t-shirt to show your support, and you support veteran-owned business when you do so, and you support our podcast. So thank you very much. Many more on the way. Stay free, guys. Live safe, and we'll see you soon. Thanks for listening to Life, Liberty, and Pursuit. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else podcasts are found. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate that. You can support us over on Ballistic Inc. by picking yourself up some merch. And remember, guys, dangerous freedom. Have a good one.